Are you struggling to leave a toxic relationship? How can you tell if your partner might be a narcissist? Would you like to heal from intimate partner abuse you've experienced in the past and learn how to avoid getting into another toxic relationship in the future? Welcome to the Heal, Grow, Evolve podcast, produced by MHNRnetwork.com, with your host, coach and expert on healing from narcissistic partner abuse, Kim Saeed of LetMeReach.com. Kim will guide you on your journey of understanding, recovery, and transformation after narcissistic abuse, and show you how life begins again after no contact. This show is brought to you by LetMeReach.com. Thanks for being here today.
Welcome to the Heal, Grow, Evolve podcast. This is your host, Kim Saeed, and today I have a special treat for you. Joining me today is Kristen Walker of Mental Health News Radio. I've known Kristen for a few years now, and I'm always amazed by her tireless advocacy for helping people heal from various forms of trauma and addiction. She's truly a heroine in the field of narcissistic abuse recovery, and I admire her and her work very much. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kim.
Well, Kristen, so as you know, today I'd like to talk about how love bombing is the gateway drug to toxic love addiction. You know, the one thing I hear over and over from clients and followers is how they want everything to go back to the way it was when they first met the narcissist in their life. You know, how everything was perfect and, you know, like a fairy tale. But really what people don't realize in the beginning is that love bombing is a tool of manipulation. Mm-hmm. You know, if there is no sort of emotional foundation there, that kind of strong love bombing is basically a way to condition you. Can you talk a little bit about that, Kristen? Because I know that I've seen you on the social media and just have heard you talk about this recently. What's your insider input on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. Huh? You'll have to get the hook to pull me off stage on this one. The interesting part about it is that someone has targeted you for their own needs. And once they have and they get their hooks in, your body chemicals are accepting that abuse right along with the love bomber, because they're hitting dopamine, they're hitting, you know, all of those love chemicals in your brain by constantly, you know, just being that dream person at the beginning of a relationship. So that's what makes it so difficult. It's not just that someone comes in and treats you wonderfully and sweeps you off your feet, and people say, well, didn't you realize it was too good to be true? I mean, come on, no one does that, you know, without an ulterior motive. You could have just left. You really can't, because now your body has become addicted to that behavior and receiving that behavior, just like someone who's addicted to drugs or alcohol.
Right. And, you know, I've written about that several times, as a matter of fact. And I think it's important for people to understand also, when we're talking about love addiction, there's actually a very thin line between love addiction and trauma bonding. I would even venture to say that love bombing is conditioning you for a trauma bond. These emotional triggers today, so that people, our listeners, will be better equipped to protect themselves. And so this is one of the reasons why it's so important to maintain no contact once you have decided to end that relationship. One of the main reasons why it's so difficult to leave these relationships is that they are highly addictive. And, you know, love bombing refers to a variety of words or actions that makes the receiver feel loved, valued, and cared for. And on the surface, it doesn't really seem like a negative thing. I mean, but for someone who may have some emotional injuries that already exist, love bombing can be very appealing. It feels like here's this person who's going to come rescue you from all of your past emotional pain, all of your bad relationships, and you form this fantasy in your mind. I mean, think about it. Here's a person you barely know. They're love bombing you, you know, sending you messages all over your social media, maybe sending flowers or gifts. You know, you're going on vacations. This maybe happens in the, you know, maybe a 3 to 6 month time frame. That is long enough to form a love addiction.
Absolutely. Especially if there's, you know, physical touch, even just physical touch involved, and especially sex.
Right. Because as we know, especially for women, you know, our bodies do submit oxytocin, which is a bonding chemical. And so not only are you being bonded to that person through your neurological biochemicals, but also the oxytocin, which makes you feel like you're bonded to that person. It's also called the cuddle chemical. So the problem with love bombing is once the mask starts slipping, or, you know, the narcissist or the sociopath starts getting bored, they end the relationship. And this usually happens because the target of the love bombing starts noticing some things happening that aren't quite right in the relationship. And usually this manifests as disappearing, not answering your calls or your text messages, just disappearing with no explanation. Or maybe you're sitting there at dinner one night and all of a sudden they're getting a text from another, you know, person that could be an ex or someone else they're dating, or you may even catch them on a dating website.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that, Kristen? What other signs do you think people should be on the lookout for?
Well, I think definitely be on the lookout for, you know, just getting started in a relationship and all the, and immediately this person is doing Herculean acts, you know, helping take care of your family, stepped right into parenting your child. I mean, just things that, you know, take time for proper boundaries and respectful time to get to know someone. They just make themselves 100% available and intrusive into your life, but you're so grateful. You know, typically we come from this place of a deficit of love, you know, where we're coming from on the codependent side. And so that's why we end up seeing this person as, oh my gosh, they're everything I could have ever wanted, because look at how they're proving their love for me. And that's what gets us hooked. Immediately, our body chemicals start flooding in. We get used to this attention. And so as the cracks and the mask starts to slip over the course of the relationship with the love bomber, we're shocked, we're taken aback, we just want things to go back to the way that they were before. All of a sudden we're being projected upon, their issues have now been poured onto us, and we're this big problem. They are constantly trying to fix our lives. We're just not good enough. If we're not doing what they want us to be doing, we can't please them. There's no amount of pleasing them, where in the beginning everything that we did was just, you know, like, you know, manna from heaven came rolling out of everything that came out of your mouth, and now nothing you can do is correct. So you're just completely bewildered. You're attached. You're chemically attached and emotionally attached. And you've put all of your esteem and so on in this person's love basket, realizing that they don't really have a love basket. That was all a facade in order to hook you.
Right. And so after that initial period of love bombing, where you do become emotionally attached to that person, and this typically happens, I think, mostly for people who have an insecure attachment style.
Yes.
You know, and that's maybe another thing we can talk about on another show, is relationship attachment styles. But it's very easy for, you know, and I had one. I definitely had one back then when I was tricked into this relationship. But it really is. This is why you read about how it's just like overcoming heroin or cocaine, the very strongly addictive drugs, because you're so used to it. You're riding that euphoria for 3 to 6 months, and suddenly it's gone, and you literally go into a desperate withdrawal.
Absolutely. And these things can take a long time to play out. You can be in people think, oh, it just happens right away. Yes, they come on strong right away, but this sort of love bombing behavior can go on for, you know, 1-2 years until you're married, until they've attached to you in a way, in a business partnership or a marriage or something like that, that makes you legally bound to them. And then you, all of a sudden, it's like you're hooked. Now you have to deal with them because you're legally bound, and then all hell breaks loose at that point. And you're like, what did I just get myself into? But you're so attached because you're still filled with all these chemicals with love, and you are in denial because you don't want to see what's really happening, that at that point you're in full-blown addiction with this person. And the last thing that you can think of is leaving them, because you've made your whole life about them at this point. You're legally bound to them. Now what do you do?
Absolutely. And I get emails about these kinds of things all the time. And, you know, that's why it's so important to approach relationships. There's kind of a relationship attachment model. But before we go into that, I want to talk about some of the symptoms of love addiction that people might experience once they realize the relationship is coming to an end, or maybe it's they know it needs to end, but they can't quite make it happen. You know, and people don't like to hear those words, you know, I'm a love addict or you're a love addict. They don't like to hear that because it makes them feel like it's all their fault. It's all their responsibility.
Right. That they're weak in some way, that they let this happen. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of shaming involved in it. And to be honest, you've been carrying the shame for someone whose greatest task in life is to escape their shame. That's why they pick people like us who will absorb it for them. So you're not only carrying your own shame about this, you're also carrying someone else's who has way more shame because of what they've done to so many people that's now living within you as well.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the symptoms of love addiction, which can also overlap with symptoms of trauma bonding. Obsession with a romantic love interest. And this, you know, this manifests as cyber stalking someone on their social media, you know, doing drive-bys, you know, driving by their home to see if their car is there. Well, maybe if their car's there, that means maybe they're not out with someone else, or, you know, coincidentally showing up at their favorite coffee shop, you know, fabricating these encounters. Mm-hmm. So at least you can see them and maybe talk to them and get them back into your life again. And another big one, too, is mistaking sex or romantic attention to mean that there's long-term potential or a true emotional bond. That's a big one. So people believe that, okay, so they broke up with the narcissist or the narcissist broke up with them and then they get back together, you know, to have that last talk. And next thing you know, you're in bed with them. And then you're thinking in your mind that everything's back to normal. And that is not what the narcissist is thinking at all. All they know is they hooked you back in and oh boy.
They scored and now they're out. Yeah.
Or believing that you can be loved in a special way that will make you happy for the rest of your life, you know, as seen in.
Exactly.
And
aren't we set up for that in our society? I mean, every other movie, or if not more, just every movie is set up to where you meet Prince Charming or you meet the right woman, the right person. And then all of a sudden, all your dreams come true and life is a fairy tale walking on a cloud. And that's just not reality. That's a movie. That's a book. That's, you know, a form of entertainment. That's not actually what real life and the hard work that comes with being in a relationship is about. So I call it, you know, people that really are addicted to Fantasy Island.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because that's true. It's so true. And that's what keeps the love addict in such a high state of turmoil is just hanging on to that fantasy. And that's part of what makes it so hard to let go is you had that love bombing experience. And even if you weren't a love addict before you met the narcissist, you certainly are after you've been in the relationship for some time.
And guess what? Like any other form of substance, you know, that's an addictive substance, once it's happened to you one time with one of these kinds of people, unless you do a lot of work, and I know we're going to get into that piece, but a lot of work and maybe have a few more relationships like this, you know, you're conditioned to meet yet another person like this. Maybe not as bad as the first, sometimes worse than the first, because your body's been turned on into that addictive mode and, you know, you've been managed down into a place where you're very, 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 very susceptible to getting into another one.
Right. And I'll be talking more about that over time, but it's, you know, we're reacting out of a trauma mind, a trauma mindset, but maybe a lack of control, reacting immediately to emotional triggers. And things that come to mind when I say that are, you know, maybe you go out and you're eating dinner, suddenly you look over and you see the narcissist with someone else. And so not only are you feeling traumatized because, yeah, they found someone else now, but you run home and you gather all of their things and you burn their stuff out in your front yard, or maybe you find yourself confronting the new partner. Those are also signs of love addiction, or just having these compulsive behaviors, things that happen that you really don't have any control over in the moment. And that's why learning emotional resilience is so necessary when recovering from this kind of a relationship. Self-soothing is one of the first things I think people need to learn, because not only will it help them when they're home alone, but it will also help them if they see the person out in public.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, you know, we were talking about signs. We're conditioned. I mean, if you look at books like 50 Shades of Grey as an example, or Twilight as an example, I'm not putting those down, but once you are awakened to what this is and you re-look at those things again, those books that were so unbelievably popular are all about control, manipulation, triangulation, unhealthy attachments, narcissistic abuse. I mean, that's what those books represent, especially 50 Shades of Grey. So there are ways that we're conditioned out of trauma in our own childhood, other relationships, whatever it may be, where, as an example, I had someone who stalking me on social media constantly. I'm getting a notice from LinkedIn that he's looking at my LinkedIn profile every day, and he knew what he was doing. He knew that I would see that he was doing that, calling me, texting me, calling me day and night, making up excuses for me to be on meetings with him where he had no authority whatsoever to actually make a business decision. Even though he was, you know, a co-president of the company, they all knew that this guy was nuts. And so they didn't, you know, he was heavily managed. I didn't know this because I just met him. And the way I took it at that time was, oh my gosh, look at how much he cares about me, that he's going to all these lengths to talk to me. Isn't that cute and sweet? Now I look at that after extricating myself from this very, what I would call a sociopath. Now I look at that and think, if someone did that to me today, I would be like, block, don't want anything to do with you. This guy's a creep. Get away from him. But where I was at that time was, oh, wow, I was flattered.
I unfortunately see this happen a lot, you know, with followers. You know, they're just getting out of a relationship and they automatically jump back into dating. That's the last thing.
And worst thing that you can do. Yes.
Because every single person that I've seen, you know, my followers, my clients that have done that, ended up with another manipulator.
Yep.
And it always feels the same way. Well, this person's different. No, they're not. They're not. Because you're still, you know, vibrating that energy of having that insecure attachment style and that trauma and that neediness. And manipulators can absolutely hone in on those feelings.
They smell it. It's blood in the water and they're a shark. I mean, and it's your blood in the water and they're a shark. That's why you're a sitting duck if you don't do the healing work in between. I mean, unfortunately for me, the healing work, fortunately or unfortunately, however you can, you know, you can look, I operate out of everything that happened in my life happened for reasons, but I certainly would have taken a less painful road to getting to here. But I definitely was a sitting duck after the very first psychopath 4 or 5 years ago, because I was not healed yet. And so the second person or third person that came along and did all the same things the first one did, with, I can't get enough of you, that you're the most wonderful, everything you could ever want to hear. Well, I had just been treated deplorably and was operating at very much of a deficit and still needing that chemical hit of, you know, how good it feels to have your own body chemicals drip, drip, dripping in and filling you up because you're addicted to it. So the minute another one walked in doing the same thing, I was like, oh, good, I can have this feeling back. And this one's better because he's blah, 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 without realizing I'm doing the same thing I did with the first one.
I did that too, Kristen. I'm no stranger. And, you know, I did the same thing, except he was more covert. So it took a little bit longer for me to figure it out. But he was absolutely the same. But thank goodness, you know, I was able to recognize it. It was like it would just happen like a shift. I just realized it. I realized what was happening. And I ended the relationship that day and decided, okay, there is something inside of me that needs to be fixed before I even think about going into another relationship.
Absolutely. And I've had them be all different kinds, you know, overt, covert, whatever. And then finally, the last one was really a love addict himself. And is actually a lovely person, but he's got his love addict issues. And so I've sat and I've thought, huh, I guess I was supposed to taste every flavor before I finally get it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You know, it's really good that you bring that up because, you know, I often thought in the past when I first started, you know, blogging, I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if two people that were at the receiving end of narcissistic abuse could get together? They'd be great for each other, right? No. Absolutely not, because it is trigger city.
It is.
It's really not very different from being in a relationship with a manipulative individual. It's just that these people are reacting out of their trauma triggers. And so they may behave in ways that look like abuse. And, you know, I don't want to say that to give anyone the idea that, oh, okay, so this is why the narcissist is acting this way. He or she's just acting out of their trauma triggers. No, you know, if you're in a relationship like that, where you're constantly being triggered, put down, blamed, cheated on, all that, you got to ask yourself, why am I trying to make this situation work?
Right, exactly. And if you're in a situation where, oh my God, it was wonderful, amazing, I'm showered with love, and now all of a sudden nothing you can do is good enough, especially the moment that you sign some form of contract, and then it's like Jekyll and Hyde appears at that moment, and you're just shell-shocked. It's real easy to annul things. It's not easy emotionally, but you know, you can have an annulment. You can still, you're never trapped, but boy, do we feel like we are.
And that's one thing I learned in my journey. I didn't see this for a very, very long time, but I think it's important for me to share this, is that after I had been, you know, working on my inner healing for some time, I realized that a lot of the prison I felt I was in my own mind. I realized that, oh my goodness, I could have left sooner. Mm-hmm. But even after I left, I felt trapped still. Even though he wasn't there, I still felt trapped. And I thought, I'm never going to get over this. It was an extremely agonizing experience. You know, the obsessions, feeling like, you know, well, I kind of felt that way because he was stalking and harassing me. But even after I got that little situation taken care of, but we do have the power to change our circumstances.
Yeah, and it's very difficult. I remember the days. I don't remember the feeling attached to it anymore, thank goodness. But I do remember the days where the last person I thought about before I went to sleep was this person. And if I woke up at 2 a.m., and couldn't go back to sleep, boom, they're on your mind. I finally fall back asleep with major anxiety and then wake up again in the morning and they're the first person on your mind again. Like they're just always there and you feel like, I just want to cut them out of my brain, which of course is not possible. There's a lot of work that goes into making that happen, but you can't do it without going either low or no contact, because that's a constant reminder to you of them, and your desire for things to go back to the way they were in the beginning is so powerful that constant contact with them makes it virtually impossible to actually get away from them long enough so that you can heal and see this from a healthy perspective and see that was horrible. That was I can look back at these relationships and see my part in them, and I can see the other person's part and see the sadistic behavior of theirs. And the person I am today would go, oh, never would I get involved with someone like that. But that I could not see the truth of that while I was in it.
And, you know, I think it's important for people to realize those feelings, all the emptiness, the panic, the sense of not knowing who you are, the feeling of never finding love. it can all feel so overwhelming, like it'll never end. But really what's going on is there's a part of ourselves that's trying to surface. One, you know, that part of ourselves that we've been avoiding, that's trying to come to the surface and tell us this way of life is not good for you anymore.
Right.
So behind all those terrors and fears is an opportunity to move into a direction of becoming empowered. So this withdrawal that we go through actually mm-hmm. contains the seeds of becoming a completely healthy person. But how do you get there? You know, you have to go no contact right. or low no contact. And really, the only time anyone should have modified contact or low contact is when you share in custody of a child.
Yep.
If you own a business together, you may, you know, contact an attorney, let them handle things as much as possible. Or maybe if you have a shared employment situation, but still, even then, I would recommend finding another job.
Yes. I mean, it's not worth sticking it out. And oh God, I just remember even the town that I lived in, I could not step foot in the town. Just everything about it was triggering. And I remember I created a trip out of state just to get away. And the moment I crossed that state line, I was like, this huge weight lifted off of me. I could go to the grocery store and not be concerned who I'm may run into. It was amazing. It was so good for my healing to experience that, because then I got to see this is what it's like to not be engulfed with what happened, not just with that person, but the whole situation. It gives you the room and the space within yourself to start the healing process, because you have distance, space, because they're not, you know, in your face all the time.
You know, I remember that. I remember going out and enjoying my time alone. I would take myself out, you know, for coffee or even to dinner. Mm-hmm. I kind of yep. romanced myself for a while. But I do remember in the beginning that I felt this need to rush home, because I'd always been told when I was out, oh, you're flirting, you're whoring around, you're doing this, you're trying to, you know, you want to make people look at you. And I would rush home. And then that was a symptom of love addiction or the withdrawal aspect of it. I was running back home to an empty apartment. So then I learned I had to force myself through that discomfort, because I felt like I was wrong just simply for being out at Barnes and Noble. Like, I felt like, you know, it was those echoes in my mind of what my ex would say. You're trying to flirt. You want people to look at you. And I was simply out there drinking coffee and reading a book.
Right.
So it was getting back right. down to reality-based thinking.
I've been accused of in a business relationship that turned personal. I've been accused of, you know, creating relationships with other companies in order to take his company down or to compete or whatever, when the reality was I was an independent contractor and I could do whatever I want because it was my own company. But they claim ownership of you. That's part of, you know, how they get you so attached and meshed in them. They want your property. So it's okay for them to just touch you in any way that they want, because you are property. You're an extension of them. They don't see you as a separate individual. And that's also part of what creates that chemical reaction to them, is that you feel like that quote unquote confidence that they show around their ownership of you feels like, or can look like, safety and security and how much they care about you, when actually it's damaging, destructive, and unhealthy.
Right. And that is another area that needs to be healed for us. So let's right. talk about, you know, how do you maintain no contact and other, you know, healthy ways to cope with withdrawing from love addiction or just the toxic relationship itself. Just don't give up. You know, even if you do have a backslide, you make contact, don't feel like, oh, I made this mistake, you know, I might as well just, go back to the relationship. I did that so many times. I felt like, okay, well, I made this mistake, we're back in the relationship again. I might as well just stay here. That was really, I think, a symptom of or a manifestation of learned helplessness. But just remember, it is an addiction, and there are going to be times when you're overcome by your feelings. You know, that's okay. Forgive yourself. Realize what's happening. It's not love. It's an addiction. It's trauma bonding. And those two things you're going to have to work on. And over time, it does get easier. But the more times you break no contact, the more times you make, you know, you get together with a narcissist. And we have all these self-sabotaging thoughts. Well, I need to write that last letter, or I need to have that last set down meeting. No, you don't.
Right.
You've already done that.
Yeah, you absolutely do not.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of reading, you know, if you've just learned you're with a narcissist and you know you need to leave and you want, you feel like you need to educate yourself, do that. It is necessary to educate yourself. But if you've been on this road now for a year, you've been reading about narcissism 24/7, it's time to stop that and start learning about how to overcome toxic love addiction. Those are the things you need to redirect your focus to, because it's
right.
going to give you the upper hand. You know, the more knowledge you have about love addiction and trauma bonding, the more you'll be able to plan for and recognize triggers. So, Kristen, tell me your thoughts about this. Another thing I often recommend, especially in my boot camp, the Essential No Contact Boot Camp, is, you know, there are tons and tons of Facebook groups, you know, open groups, closed groups, private groups that actually keep people entrenched in trauma.
Yes, yes.
I think it's very important to be discerning about the types of so-called recovery groups that you're in.
I agree. I mean, what you do, definitely, you know, there are people out there that are doing the good work here. And then there are others that, I mean, I had one who has quite a following who, after doing some investigation, you know, because I had had him on my show, he claims to be this, I won't say his name, of course, but, you know, he claims to be this survivor of narcissistic abuse, but he's never gone to any kind of therapy or treatment around it whatsoever. And he loved to talk about how survivors of narcissistic abuse were sending him pictures of themselves and their underwear, you know, in envelopes to him. And I said, well, I can understand that you can't control that you're getting mailed these things. However, why do they have your home address? And why aren't you in therapy yourself? And all you ever read on this site is just, for years now, first of all, there's a woman's picture on it. So you think you're speaking to a woman when you get into the site, and then you get hooked and you realize it's a man. And then now, oh, he's the only man that really understands this. So it's quite the setup for yet another narcissistic relationship with someone claiming to be a survivor. So, you know, those kinds of things, if it's the same place that they're at and the site's been going on for 4 years, 5 years, the group, the Facebook group, whatever it is, if it's just complaining constantly about the narcissist and there's no evolution through the writing to, now let's get to the healing piece. Let's look at what you can do to heal yourself and protect yourself from these kinds of relationships. If you don't see that group evolving, then why would you want to be a part of it? Because then you're just going to stay stuck where that group is. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And really, it's just the basics of neuroplasticity. Because the things that you focus on every single day are the things that are going to manifest in your everyday life and in your reality. So if all you do is get on these Facebook groups and they're all complaining about narcissists, they're not doing anything to improve their own lives, you know, there should be an organic transition.
Yes.
As you said.
I was just going to say that even my own writing, in the beginning, you're angry and you want the world to know and you've got to figure out how to help people. And every survivor that I've talked to, or every other one, is, no one knows enough about this. I want to help, because you're just so shocked and horrified. And, you know, you want to start a support group for this. without realizing that there's a ton of them out there already. But it's like that's a stage two of the healing. And I just moved a lot of pages from an old website of mine over to a new one and read some of the articles I had written during that time, which are very, very good. And I kept them up because I want them. I want anyone to be reached at whatever place they are on their journey. But I would not write an article like that today. I don't need to go there anymore, but I needed to then. So again, like we're saying, you know, evolving to a different space in your healing, but no shame in being in those necessary stages on the road to your healing.
And that's why, you know, that's another part of overcoming this is always be kind to yourself. You know, don't Yes. treat yourself the way your abuser did. You know, you're not them, so you don't deserve what they put you through. And that's why it's so important to get control of your thoughts. And that's hard to do, again, when you're hopping on these Facebook groups and all they're doing is just kind of rehashing this stuff that you're trying to get away from. There does come a point where it's damaging. And two, I think some people do use it unintentionally as a way to keep the narcissistic or the experience of that relationship, to hold on to it. So that's why it's part of, you know, part of the process of letting go is unjoining all those Facebook groups where Yes. all you see is these horrific pictures of skeleton faces and, you know, blood dripping and fangs. You're traumatizing Yes. your subconscious mind for one.
By watching that, yeah.
Yeah, and keeping yourself addicted to the drama of it all. And then
Yes.
you're hanging out with people who are not moving forward in any meaningful way.
So I mean, I got to a point, even though my most popular shows on my podcast are about narcissistic abuse, I got to a point where I just was like, you know, and I got invited even to speak at this large group out of the country. And it would have been great for the show, my network, everything. I just was like, you know what, I'm going to put my healing first, and I support what you're doing, but I don't really want to, you know, that's not where I'm at anymore. It's not that I don't believe in it. It's not that I don't still talk about it, but I don't want to be that entrenched in it anymore because I'm in a different space. Not that I'm saying it doesn't exist, because boy, it does, but it's so okay. And it's healthy to go, okay, it's time to, you know, focus all that energy on my own healing in loving ways and not be so entrenched in the abuse part of what happened.
Right. And I think, you know, it's important to bring up the fact that I have seen people who are 5 and even 10 years out of these relationships, Yes. and they are still stuck. There's something they're doing. They're either in the wrong Facebook groups. They are, you know, still making contact. You know, that's why it's so important that you do go no contact or low contact if you share kids, so you can create that space for healing. Because if you still have that person in your life in some way, whether it's just reading about narcissism 24/7 and you're still stuck years down the road, that means you need to change something. You need to seek trauma therapy, or, you know, people also, I think a big mistake is that they try to do this alone. They're trying to piecemeal all this information from the internet. And at the end of the day, Right. they're so overwhelmed that they don't know where to start. And so that's why it's important to simplify your life. Get rid of all the Facebook groups. Stop watching tons and tons of the videos. I mean, they're out there. Yes. I'm still making them myself. But, you know, those should just be for people who are just learning about it. Get into a program, whether it's a 12-step program, you know, get a sponsor, just like you would any other kind of withdrawal from, you know, or rehab from drugs or alcohol. Or even, you know, I've got a great online course, the Essential No Contact Bootcamp, and the people in there are absolutely wonderful. You know, we do have that private group. Lots of great encouragement there. Anyway, I think that's another thing is don't try to do it on your own, because you know, I in Yes. a sense did do it on my own, and it took me way longer than it should have.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting was I did a lot of things. This is something, too, that is part of the ramifications of the chemical bond that you make, the trauma bond that you make, is I was doing a lot of really good things, the no contact. I mean, I had at one point, you know, no one in the organization was allowed to email me anymore. They had to email my operations director, and they treated me like I was bananas and a diva for that behavior. And I was doing it because they were triggering. I put so, just things like that, I put so much shame and guilt on myself until, you know, I found you and Christine Louis de Cannonville and Andrea Schneider and Shahida Arabi. You know, I just found what you're writing, which is focused on the healing parts of it and getting into the reality of this, where I went, oh, I was actually doing exactly what I was supposed to do. It would have been so nice to have the acknowledgement by reaching out to people that what I was doing was okay, because it would have made it easier to get through to the, you know, the healing part of letting it go if I hadn't felt guilty for doing what was a good thing.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad that you created those boundaries, because really it's detaching from any kind of drama or chaos.
Yes.
And that's why you will find yourself in, you know, in many cases having to let go of friendships once you realize that, oh my gosh, I've been friends with this person for years and I just realized it's a one-way street here. You may discover that your job is a really big drain. Start looking for another job, you know, other employment. So it's really about creating that space for peace and calm so you can start to, you know, activate your relaxation response as opposed to always being in that hypervigilant state.
Yes.
You know, if you have a big event going on in your community and you know the narcissist is going to be there, don't go. You know, even if you've been doing this every single year, don't go. Find something
to do
until, you know, if it's a really big deal for you, find something else to do for a year or two until you have developed the emotional resilience, so that when you do come face to face with that ex, if that were to happen, they're still in the same area, you don't feel like, you know, you're sick and you're panicky. You have to do that inner work. Stay away from situations that are going to trigger you.
You know, that's so true, because I'm such a little fighter, you know, just spit fire and all that. I had to get to a place where I let go of the ego around that, you know, oh, that he wins if I don't show up to that thing. You know what? No, he don't win. He's going to be this way for the rest of his life. I'm not. And I'm going to, who cares if he thinks, oh, I won, she's not here, whatever. Like, who cares what that person thinks? It's not about them. It's about your healing. Because, boy, did I want to, I'm going to go anyway, just because I'm not going to let him, you know. I mean, I had even people tell me, oh, don't be such a hater, let this go. You know, those kind of people, those are people that you say bye-bye out of your life too, because they're not helpful. That is not helpful. They don't understand what you've been through, or they're clueless about how they've been through it themselves, and they just haven't had an awakening, and so they can understand you. And don't go to those things, because who cares? In 20 years, is it going to matter that you didn't go to an event where someone who did horrible things to you is going to be at, because you just had to prove that they weren't going to blah, blah. No, that's not going to matter. What's going to matter is how you cared for yourself so much that you would not put yourself in any position to be further harmed.
Oh, that's good stuff, Kristen. And the same goes for blocking the person from your phone. You know, people come up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all, you know, most of it is on the subconscious level. They'll say to themselves, well, I use my phone for work, or, you know, we share kids. You know what? I use my phone for work and I share kids. I've changed my phone number 2 or 3 times now. And my ex to this day, I mean, it's, I don't know how many years later, cannot contact me on my cell phone. So, you know, you will end up having to do things that just feel counterintuitive, as you said, Kristen.
Yes.
Well, and they won. They're going to know they got under my
skin. Yes. Who cares? Really?
Yeah.
Who cares? And, you know, I want to say this too. Also, block them on social media and your phone and all that, so that you stop looking at them, so that you can't call them at a weak moment. I mean, it isn't just about so that they can't reach you. It's just so that you don't go back. I mean, I have deleted every possible way that I could find a phone number, you know, so that in a text message and whatever, after I made copies of some of the disgusting things they texted me, of course, but got rid of all of it so that I wouldn't in some week night, you know, where I'm, you know, just really missing them or whatever. So I don't go look at their Facebook and see what they're doing and get re-triggered, or I don't go text them to see how they're doing. And, you know, then they've really won.
Right. That's the way we need to look at this is, yeah, when we're breaking contact or we're looking at them on social media and doing all that, then you're right. Then they are the ones that are winning.
Yep.
While you're in the midst of an abusive relationship or just getting out of one, you know, the thought of feeling happy and healthy again seems impossible. And there is a big mountain that needs to be climbed. I'm not going to lie. You know, there are people out there that promise instant healing and, you know, immediately get relief from this trauma in your life. And there are things that can help you feel immediate relief in that moment. But I think it's important that people realize just getting out of a relationship like that is not going to heal your addiction. It's not going to heal your emotional trauma. There is work that needs to be done.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so once you've learned that this is an addiction, you know, take the steps to remove narcissistic or toxic manipulative people from your life. Get outside assistance. And on that note, I want to say, if you're with a therapist or seeing a therapist who's telling you things that just don't jive with your situation, find another one. I had a poor person tell me yesterday, well, I just, you know, my therapist told me that leaving or running away wasn't the healthy thing to do. And I'm thinking, what the what?
Get out of that therapy room immediately and don't come back. Yeah, exactly.
So find yourself a good therapist who knows about narcissistic abuse recovery. You know, and over time, you will overcome that craving. You will overcome that addiction. The emotional trauma will begin to heal. You know, and part of that recovery does involve creating boundaries. We have to create boundaries for our lives and our relationships, regardless of what we feel other people will think about them, because ultimately, it's your life and it's your happiness that's at stake.
Absolutely. Because gosh, you're worth it. And who is going to grow and heal and, you know, and have wonderful, loving relationships and a fulfilling, peaceful, empowered life? You are.
Right. And so that time of excruciating agony is actually a time to meet yourself, to meet your inner wounded self that needs attention, not from anyone else, but from you.
Oh, perfectly said, Kim. Oh my gosh, yes.
Well, thank you, Kristen, for joining me on the podcast today. You know, I learned some really great stuff from you, and I hope, listeners, that you did too. Thank you for joining us here today, and stay tuned for our next show.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Heal, Grow, Evolve podcast. Please visit our website, www.letmereach.com, for more articles and videos about healing from narcissistic abuse, as well as how to get your free beginner's guide to healing and empowerment. Looking to leave a toxic relationship? Check out your host, Kim Saeed's book, How to Do No Contact Like a Boss, available on Amazon and Audible. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Remember, life begins after no contact.